Okay, welcome back. The last class we were looking at continuing to look at different kinds of interaction of light with matter, and we looked at things such as absorption, scattering, various forms of dispersion, modal dispersion, chromatic dispersion, and its subcomponents. We looked at nonlinear effects, some of which included the Raman effect and stimulated Brillouin effects, and some of those can be used for amplification. We looked at polarization by birefringence. Okay, so if you are confused by the vast array of these things, I mean, I can quite understand you. Okay, because these are just like scratching the surface of the vast array of effects which light produces. So lights, I mean, optics is very, very different from electronics, and we are trying to do optical engineering or optical networking or optical transmission. So if you're really interested in these aspects and you would like to study these components in a lot more detail, I mean, there are a whole series of classes which are available in RPI. Okay, so Professor Schubert gives classes on sources, I mean, just LEDs and lasers, okay, entire course. And there are classes on optoelectronics which are focused more on the receiver side of things, okay, how to detect, develop photodetectors and other kinds of modulators and so on and so forth. So there is an optoelectronics class which covers these things in more greater detail, but much more mathematically sophisticated. And so prereq for the solid state physics and so on, and to understand basic optics. There's also a class on fiber optic communication and so on. So don't be, if you're really interested in this, you should go and take some of those classes. Because if you want to work in these areas, there's a lot of tremendous potential of these areas, because the power of light, I mean, man has not yet figured out how to harness it, both from, I mean, in all its glory. Okay, so. Anyway, so we were looking at second order effects of electro-optic effects. Okay, these should not be confused with some other effects which are dependent upon intensity. Okay, electro-optic effects means that if I change the electric field, I can get an effect on the refractive index. Okay, remember that one way to think about all these effects is refractive index, which is the essence of light-matter interaction. Okay, it depends upon all the properties of light, like the polarization. It depends upon intensity. It depends upon all kinds of things. Okay, so under certain conditions, so it varies. Okay, so depending upon how it varies, you have separate categorization of these effects. Okay, so electro-optic effects is, if I look at the electric field and a particular, depending upon the material, depending upon the electric field applied, I can have an effect on which causes a change in refractive index, and that will cause change in propagation. And depending upon the type of component you're using, you can create interference, etc., with that. Okay, or you can create modulators and so on. So Kerr effect essentially means that it takes the second order effect. That is, if you apply an electric field, you magnify this to cause an effect on the refractive index. You can use this to do modulation. So if you apply small electric, small change in the electric field, it will cause a larger change in refractive index, which will cause changes in phase, etc., which you can use in an interferometer, which I shall talk about in a moment, to create a 0 or 1, for example. That's a nice way to do modulation. So high-speed modulation can be done by just slight variations in electric field using the Kerr effect. Okay, so we look at the intensity-dependent refractive index. Remember, intensity is square of the electric field, and it's also related to the power of the electric field. So as if I basically shine lasers with high power and high wattage, it will start causing changes in refractive index, and it will start causing weird things. Okay, so one thing is, even if I just have a single pulse, it can undergo chirping. Okay, so chirping, you remember that within the same time of the pulse, you'll have higher frequencies and lower frequencies due to the refractive index variations. Excuse me. So this can lead to more pulse spreading and intersymbol interference, and it can also be used to our advantage. Okay, I shall talk about this in a moment later. A similar effect occurs, or sort of chirping, induced chirping, can occur because you have multiple channels. Even if you have one channel, it's called self-phase modulation. If you have multiple channels, you can have an interaction of these things. Just because of the existence of these other things, you can have some chirping. It's known as cross-phase modulation. Okay, we'll not get into the greater detail, but probably a more important effect is known as four-wave mixing, which is also occurs because you have multiple channels. Okay, so if you have channels F1, F2 to Fn, these interactions, the four-wave mixing interaction, will create new frequencies. You will actually take the power and actually couple it into some new frequencies like 2F1 minus Fj, Fi minus Fj, and Fi plus Fj minus Fk. So these are some combinations of these frequencies. So you have these new frequencies that show up out of nowhere, and then they will have effects. I mean, they will have some power. Okay, so this is like crosstalk. You take the energy in some channels, and then you create some new channels. But because the channel itself is a band of frequencies, you will start creating crosstalk in the same channel. Okay, so there'll be some. Okay, the best way to understand it is through a figure. I'll show it in a moment. So we saw this chirping business, right? If I have a single frequency in the pulse, you'll have some positive or negative chirp. Okay, in this self-phase modulation creates a positive chirp. Okay, and remember I told you laser creates a negative chirp as you modulate it. Okay, so the interaction between self-phase modulation and chromatic dispersion is sometimes known as modulation instability. Okay, and that can happen. Okay, so four-wave mixing is that if you have high power or high intensity transmission, which is typically used in long distance OC192, and you try to space these channels too close by, what will happen is that the spacing will cause these other channels to show up, and there will be some power in them. Okay, and since the signal actually is distributed in an optical, in a band of frequencies, these frequencies actually are like crosstalk frequencies. Okay, what happens is that the actual bit energy in this is derived from the bit energy here, 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 etc. Okay, so this is like, it's like crosstalk when you hear on the telephone. I mean, you are hearing somebody else's conversations, right? So that's what is caused here. So it creates both out-of-band crosstalk, okay, and also in-band crosstalk. This in-band crosstalk, I mean, this out-of-band crosstalk you can filter, basically. You can just throw away those energies. But in-band you can't filter. I mean, this is supposed to be your band. I mean, what can you do? So this is a problem. And funnily, this problem, I won't get into the details, can be actually mitigated if you have some non-zero chromatic dispersion. Okay, now we were looking chromatic dispersion as the evil and bane of everything, and then we were trying to reduce that. But if I have a little bit of chromatic dispersion, actually, it minimizes the four-way mixing. Okay, because it sort of creates some, only if these things are in, more in phase, etc., these effects actually increase. So because of chromatic dispersion, you sort of disturb the phase of these multiple channels, and that actually reduces the effects of four-wave mixing. So now as people try to develop high-speed like OC192 channels and trying to do wave division multiplexing with this, they say, now I'm going to have four-wave mixing. And if I were to use dispersion-shifted fibers, I'll be in trouble. So fiber companies were thrilled. They came up with another fiber called non-zero dispersion shifted fiber, which actually almost made that thing zero, but not quite. Okay, so it had left a little bit of chromatic dispersion in the fiber. Okay, so this is the idea of thing. I mean, you'll have some difference in the propagation as well as create crosstalk. Okay, I showed you that diagram. So here's the new story. Okay, so the latest story is that the best fiber you'd like to go for is something known as non-zero dispersion shifted fiber, because you put back some amount of chromatic dispersion here. You don't want exactly zero, because some chromatic dispersion is good for combating the other one. So the way you do that is to create a dispersion refractive index profile in the fiber, which looks like this. Okay, we'll not get into the details of this. So essentially you have a small undesirable region around the zero chromatic dispersion area, and you want to operate in a particular band. You want to move this dispersion profile into this band, but you want to be, you want to have a small non-zero value. Okay, so if you're looking at different fibers which are offered, they operate in this band. So zero dispersion fiber will make it zero exactly at 50 nanometer, and this will be your average value, which you probably don't want, but there are other non-zero fibers. Okay, so a bunch of fibers, I won't get into greater detail, but each of them operates at different bands, they have different dispersion profiles. But the more popular ones today are the non-zero dispersion shifted fibers. Okay, and typically they operate in the C and L bands. Those are the things which are talked about a lot. There's also slight differences between the considerations, whether you're looking at submarine or basically terrestrial fibers versus undersea fibers. Okay. Now, undersea fibers, I mean, if you want to cross the Atlantic or Pacific, you want to string a fiber from here to China, I mean, you have to go huge distances, okay, and there are very, very, I mean, these things have to, like, be sitting in the ocean bed, there's a huge pressure and so on and so forth. So the design considerations are fairly different. But the other, I think the only point I'll try to make is that the dispersion considerations, basically what you have to do is you have to pump at very high power. You have to use high intensity, okay, because you're trying to go very, very long distance without amplification. And so you're trying to go several thousands of kilometers without amplification here. Maybe you go from here to Hawaii, put an amplifier, and then after that goes another huge stretch in the ocean. Okay, things like that. So if you operate at high intensity, okay, as I mentioned, there is an interaction between the chromatic dispersion and the self-phase modulation, it's a second order or nonlinear effect. It's known as modulation instability. This also has an interaction with the way lasers are modulated. So essentially there's a different type of fiber you use for undersea fiber called negative dispersion fiber, the positive dispersion fiber. Here in the C-band, if you notice, you'd like to have not exactly zero, but some positive residual dispersion. Okay, this is the non-zero dispersion fiber which we use for terrestrial, but for undersea you'd like to have that values as negative. So essentially you can think of it, this as a band, dispersion band, which you can play games with depending by varying that waveguide dispersion, and you can either push it up or push it down by essentially shaping that dispersion profile. Okay, so if you learn fiber optics, you'll really understand what's the effect of those profiles, and I'm not going to go into those things. Okay, and so depending upon where these things are, you have a whole varieties of fibers which are out there. And sometimes there is something known as dispersion compensating fiber. You can actually put a length of fiber just to compensate for dispersion. And I gave you an idea. It's like a module which takes the wide pulse width and then makes it smaller, okay, by using in-fiber grating. Or you can use alternating lengths of positive and negative fibers to give you an effective zero dispersion. Okay. So rather than having an entire length which gives you exactly zero dispersion, you can have positive, negative. It gives you an effective zero dispersion end to end, but it does not, at any point in space, it has a positive or negative values. Okay, so these are games which are played in fiber span engineering. Okay, and that's all I have to say about it. Okay, so another area of research, and there are some initial sort of lot of lab type demonstrations, is the area of solitons. Okay, now, what is solitons? I had alluded to this earlier, and I said there is an interaction between self-phase modulation, which is causes a chirp. Okay, if you take a particular pulse, which is shaped in this Gaussian manner, and send it through the network, okay, you're going to have a chirp because of chromatic dispersion. Okay, and the actual chirp causes pulse widening. Okay, if you had a chirp at the beginning, suppose you had a laser which gave you a negative chirp pulse, it will cause broadening. If you had some fancy thing which you had a positive chirp pulse, the pulse will actually shrink for a time and then broaden. Okay, so people have studied the fact that if I raise the power, now not only will it broaden, I will have the self-phase modulation which will add a positive chirp. Okay, so when you have something negative and positive, people ask, can I balance it and make it zero? Right. So if I have a negatively chirped fiber output, okay, a pulse. Okay, and appropriate power which gives you self-phase modulation and chromatic dispersion. So the self-phase modulation exactly cancels out the chromatic dispersion and the negative chirping. So end-to-end, you have a pulse that doesn't change its shape. Okay, and that fancy pulse is known as a soliton. Okay, so what is a soliton? Soliton is actually a design of a pulse, and it's a family of pulses, okay, which have this particular shape. Okay, it has an amplitude envelope that looks Gaussian, and it has this frequency here. I mean, here there's no change in frequency essentially. Okay, and this beautiful shape. Okay, and if you use the appropriate power levels to cause self-phase modulation, which completely cancels out chromatic dispersion. Okay, so that the pulse doesn't broaden as it goes. Okay, so you can have 0-1s based upon this. That is the basic idea. So there is a regime, essentially some combination of parameters the input power distribution shape, the effective cross section of fiber, etc., the types of fiber you use, which will keep the shape of this pulse. And the actual, even though I show this as fairly wide pulse, you can make these pulses very, very small, okay? So essentially, one of the reasons why we cannot modulate beyond 10 gigabit per second or go very 80 gigabits or 100 gigabit or more, right, is because these pulses will have inter-symbol interference. Now, when you don't have dispersion, this, through this magic, okay, of canceling, of these effects canceling each other, you can essentially have very, very tiny pulses. And these tiny pulses are solitons. So essentially, these solitons can operate at 80 gigabit per second, and people are working at 160 gigabit per second solitons, okay? I mean, essentially modulating at that type of speeds. But the flip side is it that you can't do deep WBGM with them, okay? So you can essentially take and have one channel which operates at this speed, and people have not yet figured out all the issues with DWDM. Essentially what happens is, on a span of fiber, if you take solitons as they are propagating, they'll sort of interact with each other across channels, okay? And I mean, this is like a collision in the Ethernet space, Ethernet domain. Okay, so I'll not get into that in any more detail, but solitons, there are several types of solitons. The fundamental solitons are the ones which do not change shape at all. And the higher order solitons will undergo periodic changes in shape. So if you basically sample the fiber at appropriate point of time, you can basically regenerate the soliton. Okay, so it'll go like minus pi, plus pi, and so on and so forth. So it's a periodic pulse shape change. Okay. So the significance is that you can completely overcome dispersion, and you're no longer dispersion limited, so you can go at higher and higher speeds. So, and very, very long distance, the only thing you have to do is amplify. Okay, so all you have to do is take a long length of fiber, use optical amplifiers in very, very high power. You can just blast at very high powers. So all the effects cancel out each other, right? So then you can go at very, very high power. So in the lab, they have demonstrated 10,000 kilometers and gigabit, 80 gigabit per second type thing, okay? But the side of the story which I have not told you is that you require a special type of fiber which has the appropriate chromatic dispersion profile, and you have to use all these high power thing, and you cannot do DWDM with them. Okay, so there are people, obviously, whenever you have two regimes, you try to find something in the middle. Okay, so there's an area of research known as dispersion-managed solitons, where you try to do DWDM with a soliton-like shape or an approximation of soliton shape. And people have actually demonstrated 40 gigabit per second, 1,500 kilometer transmission, 25 channels, in 2001. Okay, so the summary of all this stuff, where is the world now? In 1983, people were working on single mode fiber operating in the 10 nanometer area, and people were demonstrating 2.5 gigabit per second for 640 kilometers without amplification. Okay, or you could do 100, I mean, there must be some error here. Okay, so this was in 1993. Okay, so, I'm not particularly sure. Okay, so these are in the 10 nanometer range, and you can do higher speeds for smaller kilometers. Okay, now people are actually looking at this today for 10 gigabit per second Ethernet. Today you're trying to do Ethernet type transmissions, not sonnet type transmissions, for 1 gigabit per second or 10 gigabit per second for metropolitan area networks. Okay, and on each wavelength you might want to do 10 gigabit per second Ethernet, for example, and not sonnet transmission. So there's some research in the metro areas in these technologies, both 13-10. But the recent single mode fibers, most of them operate at 15-50 nanometer, and it's possible for you to do 2.5 gigabit per second for 4,400 kilometers unamplified, without putting an amplifier. It's a phenomenon. Okay, so now when you start putting DWDM channels, you are sort of spacing. You have to amplify it more often, etc. So these are the standard trade-offs. I'd like to have longer spans. I'd like to put more channels, and I'd like to minimize the number of amplifiers. Each of those is like $1 million investment, right? So amplifiers are also coming down in price, but still these things are fairly complex piece of equipment. Okay, and we'll talk about these are high-powered optics equipments. And there are a variety of amplifiers. We'll just look at the erbium-doped amplifier and Raman amplifiers later. But they operate at different ranges. Okay, and I've shown you this diagram before. Okay, and I've talked about this. Future you can basically forget all of what you've learned and then look into a completely new future where you can have a huge bandwidth, no dispersion, no loss, really, right? So this is nanotubes. Okay, so there is research going on at RPI, and if you're really interested in developing this next generation technology, you could actually make all this stuff happen. Okay? Today it's all science fiction, but at RPI we've actually demonstrated long strands of nanotubes that can be grown. Okay, so it's going to be very interesting to see whether we can have completely vacuum fibers, essentially. I mean, these are and light just goes straight within it in thin air. I mean, there's no air, also vacuum. Okay, so there's no matter to interact with this, therefore there's no effect. All these effects go away, and then you can blast it how much of a power you want. Okay, so the effects here are several. Okay, so you don't and we just sort of sampled, scratched the surface of a few of these effects, which are important. You need at least a qualitative understanding if you are to understand all the components you're going to study. So some of the basic stuff are like interference, diffraction, etc. The light interaction with light is interference. Light interaction with matter, you have both linear and nonlinear effects involving the phase, involving the polarization, involving the wavelength-specific absorption, wavelength-specific scattering, linear or nonlinear scattering, and so on. Either Rayleigh scattering or the Raman scattering or the Brillouin scattering, etc. and so on. Okay. So there are measures for all of this stuff. Okay, if you look at every idea we learnt about, there is a measure for it. The attenuation you measure in dB. Okay, attenuation, there are attenuation coefficient, etc. And when you talk about gain, you also measure that in dB, decibels. Birefringence, you have ratios of powers, etc. And this will affect bitter rate, crosstalk. Extinction ratio is also used in amplification and modulation. We'll study that a little bit later. Group delay and all these are used to understand pulse spreading. And group delay is also used to measure chromatic dispersion and so on. Okay, so don't have to remember all of this stuff, but just to give you an idea. Okay, any questions so far? Okay, now we get into another mammoth chapter. So what I covered so far is based upon chapter 2 of Ramaswamy Shivarajan's, and we're going to go into chapter 3. And I don't know, by the end of this class, I guess we'll just sample some of the other chapters. Okay, I don't know whether we'll be able to go in great depth. Some of those material I've also gotten from some of the phenomenal books. Okay, and probably I should have gotten those books, but the webpage, course webpage, has links to those books. Okay, and if you're going to study optical networks in any serious way, I would recommend that you refer to those books. Okay, this, particularly one of the books I use is a DWDM book by Kartalopoulos. Okay, and some of the diagrams are from there, and also from Harry Dutton. It's an older book, but it's like a story book. Okay, it's a very much more easier to read type book. Simplified or dumbed down, okay, for people like us. And I've also used some of the optoelectronic slides from Partha Dutta, who's a professor here. And if you're interested in these ideas more, you should take some of his classes in optoelectronics and fiber optics, etc. Okay, so we're now going to go into beyond the properties of light and the. So we looked mostly at fiber issues. So we have not looked that much at components. I've mentioned components here and there. Okay, but components are the basic building blocks. When we studied electronics, I mean basic networks, we had switches, routers, links, and so on. And we just took it for granted. We didn't learn much about it. Okay, here we learn more about the physical layer, because you sometimes wonder, why don't I get the same components I get in electronics? Because light is not the same as electronics, so you don't get the same component. But you have new effects that give you new components, and the availability of the component, the price point of these components, etc., will limit what you can do. What are the kinds of network you build? So when you say, I have a passive optical network, why? Because you use passive optical components, and those are cheap. Okay, and those are like broadcast components, like hubs, right? I mean, they just take your energy and throw it in all directions. Okay, it's like a repeater, multi-port repeater, which we use in Ethernet. Okay, so similarly, we have the notion of hubs and splitters and couplers, which we should learn about in a moment. Those are very cheap. These are passive. In other words, you don't do any fancy electronics or power specific things there. You don't do electro-optic effects and so on there. So those are much more cheaper, and they are engineered in bulk. They are much more lower cost points. So people try to build networks out of those. So when we learn about networks, we use these components. Okay. So this is based upon chapters 2 and 3, but mostly on chapters 3. So we'll start off with couplers, splitters, isolators and circulators. All of these are similar. And then we'll look into a class of things known as filters. Okay, and filters can be made out of gratings. And you can create multiplexers, demultiplexers, add-drop multiplexers, etc. with them. And cross-connects to some extent. But we'll study those cross-connects and switches in the part 2 of this slide set. And we look at optical amplifiers. These are all optical amplifiers. They don't regenerate into electronic domain. So these are all optical components. And these are the, as I mentioned, these are the most critical thing that helped us do DWDM. Okay. And then fiber is dispersion limited, as I mentioned, right? So the light sources, the modulation capabilities are very important. So we'll study a variety of light sources like LEDs, lasers, VCSELs. And there are some of them are tunable. And tunability is very important for another facet of optical networks, which is essentially reconfigurable optical networks. Okay, if you just want to have a static optical network, this is like circuit switching. You set up the circuit, you can't change it. Reconfigurable optical networks means that you can set up the optical channel, say a wavelength route, and then you can switch the wavelength route and create another wavelength route in a matter of seconds or milliseconds. Okay, as these timescales of tunability change, you can do more and more adaptive stuff at the optical domain. Okay, so tunable lasers is an area which is also becoming mature as well as is an intensive research area. And detectors is another major area. Okay, but detectors we'll just survey briefly. And modulators are very important components as we want to go at higher and higher speeds. Okay, first, couplers and splitters. What are these things? Okay, the basic idea is that I have light and I have energy coming in one of these inputs. And normally the output will, normally it will go into one of these outputs, okay? But I want to do some fancy stuff here, and then I want to selectively send it to either one output or the other. That is the basic idea. Okay, this is an optical coupler. Now, either I want to do that, or I want to have a passive component that will take my power and split it passively, okay? There's no adaptivity in the component. That is the idea of a coupler. Okay, it takes energy and it couples into multiple waveguides. How does it work? What you do is you have a waveguide or a fiber. Basically, you have two fibers. Bring it close to each other. Once you bring it closer than a wavelength, right, energy will couple because the actual energy is spread out in that spatial domain. So energy will couple from one to the other, and so there's an area of study which is known as coupled mode theory. And depending upon the length, coupling length, the distance between these fibers and the appropriate characteristics, and is there any other extra electric field applied here, that determines how much energy goes here and how much energy goes here. So you are sharing some of the energy goes here, some of the energy goes here. Okay, and that is basically captured by a parameter known as coupling ratio. Okay, now why is this important? Suppose I want to tap the optical fiber and see what's going on. Okay, this is known as an optical tap. So to do this, essentially you build a coupler with an alpha close to 1, okay, which means most of the energy goes into the optical fiber only. It remains in the optical fiber, but I just want to sample it and see what's going on. So a small amount of energy comes to me so that I can figure out what's going on. That's a tap, right? The other thing which is very useful is what is known as a 3 dB coupler. Or basically, I have energy which is coming in. Half the energy goes on one side, half the energy goes the other side, okay? So this we shall see is used to create passive optical networks. So if you want to create a network, if I want to broadcast the power, right, I'll create a tree sort of topology or some sort of topology and then couple the energy such that the energy goes in all directions and it can be extracted appropriately. So it's like an Ethernet. I can create a broadcast paradigm this way. Okay, this is the idea. And you can, if this coupling is wavelength dependent, which it can be made to, then what gets coupled or alpha itself depends upon the wavelength. So different wavelengths can go out here. So what you can do is you can actually create a filter where I want to extract a wavelength out. Okay, and we will study one particular type of something known as in-fiber chirped fiber Bragg gratings, where essentially I want to the EDFA will not have a flat gain profile. Okay, so I want to amplify, but then my gain is not flat in my spectrum. There's a huge gain in one part. Okay, so I want to focus on this part where the gain is non-flat, and I want to take away some of the gain. Okay, I want to basically put a small, I want to attenuate the power in that thing. So what I'll do is I will put it through some a lambda specific or a lambda selective coupler and take out some of the power so that that will flatten the gain. Okay, so these are tricks which are used. Okay, so coupler sounds very simple, but then it also it is used very carefully to in as part of larger components or another issues. Okay. Okay, so probably the only thing you need to remember about the theory of couplers is that there is a conservation of energy constraint. Okay, you might have electric fields, and the whole electric field might show up in the other side, but it will be out of phase. Okay, at any point of time, if you add, the total energy will be conserved. Okay, that is the only thing. So there is no such thing as lossless combining of energy and so on. Okay. So that is that comes out of a theory known as coupled mode theory, which we shall now study. Okay, so now you can take couplers, and you can actually then essentially have a length of fiber, and then you can have another coupler or another component after it. Okay, so these things are used to create other bigger components. Okay, and these are known as Mach-Zehnder couplers and Mach-Zehnder interferometers. There are directional couplers which will couple only the forward direction, but not couple the reverse direction. And there are couplers which operate based upon diffraction principles. Okay, so the Mach-Zehnder we shall study a little more detail later. It basically splits the energy here, adds a phase here, and then makes the phase control can be either 0 or pi. You add some length or phase by changing refractive index over here, and then when it comes here, you try to couple back again. So either couple back or make it interfere again here. So here you might have positive or negative interference. This can be used to create modulators. It can be used to create several other effects. Interferometers are perhaps one of the most important instruments, optical instruments. Okay, so you can sort of take couplers and cascade them in tree structures to create a splitter. Okay, so I take energy here and split it and so on and so forth. Okay, and you can also do the reverse way, and you can do combiners that way. So this is a symmetric, or you have in both directions, you can have that effect. You can also create something known as a star coupler, where you take a 3 dB energy here, it goes here, it goes here, it goes here, and so the power from all inputs goes to all outputs. Instead of having a tree structure that has many more hops, you can actually do it in a much more compact fashion. It's known as a star coupling. Okay, so these are just ways of taking all the energy and throwing it everywhere else. Okay, so this is like to build a broadcast network. So these networks are sometimes known as broadcast and select networks. So what you do is take the energy from everywhere, assign wavelengths to users. So users dump their traffic on some wavelengths, take the energy, broadcast it everywhere else, and the receiver just picks up the wavelength it wants. So that's called broadcast and select the wavelength. Okay, so the broadcast part is affected through these passive elements known as couplers. So the extension of the coupler concept, you can have other ideas. Okay, one is known as an isolator, and the other is known as a circulator. Okay, it's just a fancy isolator. Okay, now isolator we saw earlier. Isolator basically lets you couple in the forward direction, but not in the reverse direction. Okay, so that's one way of thinking about it. So if you think the forward direction is one fiber, and the original thing is one fiber, you can couple in that direction, but you don't couple in the reverse direction, and you can create it in several ways. Okay, now these components are known as non-reciprocal. That is, if you reverse the input and output, you will not get the inverse effect. Okay, that's very obvious in an isolator, right? If I send data this way, I can't send it back this way. Okay, so it's a non-reversible thing. Now, circulator is also used in quite a lot in electronics. Okay, if you've done circuits, you must have used RF circuits, and so we use circulators all the time. So the idea here is the following. I mean, if I have inputs 1, 2, 3, okay, and I send light energy from input 1, it will go to 2. Okay, it will go to output 2. And if I have input from 2, it will go to 3. If I have input at 3, it will go to 1. Okay, so the input from 3 will not go to 2. Okay, you see. So basically the energy circulates from one input to the next input in the appropriate direction, okay, depending upon the sense of rotation here, okay, circulation here. So you can have multiple input circulators, etc. Okay, we use this in RF design as well. I mean, suppose you want to take some energy here, put it into a measurement thing, and then maybe insert a pulse here and so on, and you don't want to dump this energy over here because it'll kill some equipment over here. So these are the reasons why you use circulators. So circulation provides isolation between a particular set of components, and it will also let signals to go in particular directions. Okay, this is the property of circulators. Now, recall that we used polarization phenomena to do isolators, right? And these kinds of things are, these crystals which are used are sometimes known as dichroics, okay? And we use rotators to create isolators, okay? And I won't go into this. Another figure of isolator is exactly the same. I have state of polarization or SOP, which is shown in this diagram. I have this vertical thing, and if I go through a vertical polarizer, it will go vertical. If I put a rotator, it will rotate it by a defined angle. The angle could either be an absolute angle or it could depend upon the initial angle, depending upon the type of rotator. And then another this 45 degree polarizer which lets it through. Reflected light will come here, the rotator will rotate further and it will be blocked. Okay, but this is, if you notice, it's a polarization dependent isolator. That is, if the input polarization were not vertical, this whole thing will not work. Okay, so there are designs which are polarization independent isolators. Okay. Now, essentially what they do is they take crystals which are birefringent. Okay, remember what birefringent crystals do. They resolve polarization. Suppose I have an arbitrary polarization which has an X component and a Y component. This thing will create an ordinary wave and extraordinary wave, as I said, right? So, this extraordinary wave will have this vertical polarization, ordinary wave will have this stuff. And then it will go through the rotator business, and there is an extra plate here which also adds a 45 degree. This thing. Actually, this plate is known as a half wavelength plate. There are these plates called half wavelength and quarter wavelength plates. The interesting things about these plates are that the rotation of polarization that these fellows do actually depend upon the initial angle which comes in. Okay, so the actual rotation is a function of the angle which of the polarization itself. Okay, so the half wavelength plate obviously turns it this way. And here you have on the here you have some more rotation of this, and you have on the fiber out you have this thing. When you have a reflected wave that comes back here, so what happens is that only one polarization part gets out; the other polarization is totally absorbed here. Okay, it's blocked by this. Okay, and these crystals are sometimes known as spatial walk-off polarizers because it breaks this thing to spatial components. Okay, so anyway, so that was an example of an isolator. You could build circulators by combining isolators, or you could actually build a single integrated component that does a circulator. We will not get into those details. That's one of the components we use, and we shall use couplers quite a lot. The next set of things we'll use is basically a filter. Okay, so what does a filter do? I have wavelengths lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3, lambda 4. These are channels, and I want to pick one wavelength, lambda 1, and then I want to send the other wavelength elsewhere. This can also be thought of as an add-drop multiplexer. See, I am dropping this wavelength, and similar, if I do the reverse process, it's like adding a wavelength thing. Okay, so that's the standard add-drop multiplexer component. So that's why it's also filters and multiplexers have a clear thing. Okay, multiplexer in general means that you have multiple wavelengths and I do this. I can do this in multiple stages, or I can do it in an integrated design. Okay. Okay, so the obvious applications are that I'd like to select some band or select a wavelength, or I'd like to create cross connects out of this. Okay, wavelength cross connects. So I want to take some wavelengths, attach it to other wavelengths, and create a switch, okay, out of this. But these are static connections, okay, these are static cross connects, these are not dynamic. Okay, you cannot actually change these cross connects over time. And there are some equalization of gain. I gave you a simple example where I want to throw out some of the energy from particular spectral parts, so that I flatten the gain and so on. Okay, we shall see some of that idea. And filtering of noise. The original reason why we study filters is because noise has, all these high amplitudes, high frequencies I want to reject. That's why you want to have some component which basically has a given bandwidth. Okay, and beyond it will reject everything else. Okay, so that, and so you also have noise in optics which you can filter. And you can create dispersion compensation, etc. And the reason why we studied this before lasers is because some of the ideas are used in lasers. Okay, lasing uses ideas in filtering, it uses ideas in optical amplification, and then it also has a feedback loop. Those three things together makes a laser. Okay, so let's study filters first. So filters, essentially, you look in the frequency domain. Okay, in optics, it is quite common, rather than talk about terahertz, you just talk about nanometers and so on. So you basically, when I say frequency and wavelength, it's exactly the same thing. And I want to have a particular filter characteristic over here. And the nice things I like is I like to have a flat region over here, gain region. And then I'd like to have a very sharp transition, which is called a skirt. Okay. So I'd like to have flat pass band and a sharp skirt. And I'd like to be able to manufacture these things in bulk. Okay, and typically using integrated optics or integrated electronics techniques. Okay, and the usual idea is that you try to do this using interference or diffraction. Essentially, what you do is diffraction or interference. Either you select wavelengths, select wavelength bands, and throw the others away, or interference. You basically kill. Through interference, I think I showed you interference phenomena where you can have sharp pass bands just because of the way interference occurs. If you have number of wavelengths that interfere, you can have sharp pass bands, the rest dies. Okay, we'll study that more carefully later. So gratings is a general word that is used in the context of diffraction. Okay, grating could be either a reflection grating or a pass-through grating. What this means is you have periodic refractive index changes, and this period here is also called the grating pitch. Okay, essentially determines how the different wavelengths are diffracted. Okay, so as these things pass through, okay, you have different degrees of refraction for these fellas, and then when they go and you have a plane to an imaging plane, you have interference after that. Okay, so what happens is it's like prism effect. So you have different wavelengths having focal points in different areas. Okay, so there's a formula for dealing with this grating. So as I said, you can have essentially a composite wave that comes in here, and you want to resolve the wavelengths, which is the essential idea of filtering, right? And you can actually create a grating through a cavity method. Okay, so, and I shall describe that. And such gratings are known as etalons or cavities. Okay, I don't know why they're called etalons. Okay, so as I said, the grating can be reflective type, okay, or they can be pass-through type. And if you have these sort of angles of these gratings, okay, and these types of gratings are known as blazed gratings. Essentially, what the issues in the in diffraction, if you study diffraction carefully, there's something known as a zeroth order diffraction. In a zeroth order diffraction, there is no separation of the spectral components. So different wavelengths, all wavelengths show up in the zeroth order diffraction, and it turns out zeroth order diffraction has most of the energy also. So in the wavelength splitting process or in the filtering process, you don't want to lose all the energy, right? You want to keep all the energies, but you want to split up the wavelengths. That's your goal, right? So blazing, essentially what it means is that you want to concentrate all the non-zero order thing, okay, and you want to concentrate all the refracted energies in these different maximum. So that's one of the reasons you do this blazing business. Okay, and you can achieve that just by inclining these slits, okay, or these sometimes are called slits, but essentially these are essentially mirrors, okay. So I think if you have a bunch of mirrors, okay. And you have, see, mirrors you think are perfectly reflective, but mirrors in fact are semi-reflective or partially reflective. So you can have some pass-through and then some reflective component. Okay. So here's a funny thing you can do. You can take partially reflective mirrors and then arrange them at distance, lambda, okay, big lambda to each other. So this is known as the pitch of the grating. So what is happening is the light is going, it's getting reflected back. Okay, light is going, it's getting reflected back, okay. So now these reflected components will all interfere because they are out of phase, right? So, and then these interferences will lead to, concentration of energies in particular wavelengths. So only some wavelengths will interfere in phase, all the others will pass through. Okay, they will not reflect. Okay. So essentially what is happening is that the energy will couple from the incident wave to the reflected wave. Okay, so essentially these mirrors can also be fancy mirrors. These are wavelength specific mirrors. Okay, you see, normally if you put a mirror, you shine any light at it, it will reflect back. But you can create mirrors by writing onto fibers which are wavelength specific reflections. So only certain wavelengths can get reflected back. So you create such gratings periodically, so these fellows get reflected back, everything else passes through. Okay, so and you get all of these add up in phase, and you get all the energy of them. Okay, what you have done, you have essentially created a filter. You're pulling out that wavelength. Okay, and this is called a Bragg grating, and essentially there's a mathematical condition called a Bragg condition, which the wavelength has to satisfy, which depends upon the effective refractive index and the actual this length of this in the spacing. Okay, that's a simple linear formula. Okay, another way of looking at it is it's like this. You can have either free space, air, or dielectric, and a bunch of semi-mirrors. You have a reflected resonant wave, okay, because resonant means it adds up constructively, and all these other fellows get out. And even if the other guys get reflected for any reason, they will add up destructively. So it's slight mix of diffraction and interference phenomena is used. Okay, so if you look at, if you ask, what about the other guys? Okay, so in other words, I have a lambda here, okay, or here's my target lambda, and I want to look at the power spectrum of it. Power spectrum means, how much is the power which is reflected at this particular spectral point? And I ask, what is happening to the remaining guys? Okay, you see that you have these other small bumps on the road. Okay, so once you measure in dB, right, you get the real picture. If you look at a normal thing, you might not see much power, but the essentially some of these other guys are nulled out, but there are some significant peaks on the basic Bragg grating. So there is a version of Bragg grating known as an apodized grating, where essentially you sort of increase the grating sizes as you go. Okay, so there's a small trick you play in terms of the grating sizes, that effectively you kill all these other side lobes. Okay, so but you do that at an expense. So what you have, this main lobe gets spread out. So you filter it. It actually now can only filter larger thing. It'll kill everything else out effectively, but now it's thing is spread. Okay, and it's not as fat as you like top. Okay, so lasers do use Bragg gratings, and we shall talk about this later. Okay, so Bragg gratings can be achieved through cavity. It can also be written right onto a fiber length. Okay, so this is very attractive because I have real fiber, and then right onto the fiber I can write a Bragg grating. So a manufacturer who's creating fiber for you can also, at appropriate lengths, they can create Bragg gratings for you. Okay. And so obviously this can be done as part of the fiber manufacture process, etc. So there are several considerations you'd like to take into account, but essentially you can write it by using photosensitivity techniques. Okay, so there are two types of fiber gratings we will be concerned with. One is known as a fiber Bragg grating. Whenever you use the word fiber Bragg, it always means a short period grating. So the actual distance between the grating is very, very small. Okay, so it's like in the order of micrometers. Okay, if you have the period between the gratings which is larger in the order of millimeters, these are known as long period gratings, and these are used in EDFAs to do gain flattening and gain compensation. I told you that gains can be non-uniform, right? I like to flatten the gain by actually killing some part of the energy in particular spectral components. That is done by using fiber gratings. So the principles of operation are slightly different. Okay, so that's fiber Bragg grating is basically diffraction. This is not exactly diffraction. Okay, so this is how it is written. So you have this sort of uniform thing, looks exactly, whenever you look at this, you know it's a Bragg grating, okay? I mean, if the assumption is that this is all of the order of wavelengths, okay, like micrometers, etc. And you see here, the way Bragg gratings work is by reflection. That is why you need to put isolators on the other side and so on. So you send these fellows here, and then you get this reflected energy back. You try to get some sort of a circulator type thing here. See, now you can see why the circulator is useful. When you have forward energy coming here, the circulator will send the forward energy here. When you have reflected energy coming here, the reflected energy can be pulled out, right, of the other input of the circulator. So the circulator can be used over here. And all the other energies, all the other thing goes here. So this is an add drop multiplexer essentially. So you can create this by using on standard silicon type, or basically compound semiconductor substrates. Okay, and this is exactly what I said. Okay, so you have a fiber Bragg grating that's demonstrated here with these sort of marks here. Okay, like war marks here on top of the fiber. And then essentially what this means is that signal is going here. Okay, coupler will take this, there's a circulator which will take the energy and put it in from 1 to 2. And then fiber Bragg grating will reflect back something, take the circulator and get this energy, this piece out. Okay, the assumption is that there's a nice filter, everything else is dead. Okay, so you're getting this thing out and all the other wavelengths go ahead. Now you can essentially do a similar thing and add it also. Okay, so look at how an add part will work. I will get this wavelength I want to add here, and it will go here to this part of the fiber Bragg grating and it will get reflected back. And then essentially this, if I had a bunch of wavelengths that came here, it has now been added to this. Okay. Now this kind of design obviously it looks nice on paper, but this adds a little more noise, etc. in reality. So in reality this design is a little more complex. Now, this is a basic principle. Now I mentioned that a chirped grating can be used to do dispersion compensation, and here's how it works. Okay, now if the grating I mentioned is uniformly spaced, okay, you can also play games by spacing it non-uniformly. Okay, by spacing it non-uniformly, essentially what you're making is that you're making some piece of the spectrum travel longer, okay, and the other piece of the spectrum travel shorter. Okay, and this Bragg grating is anyway filtering out this whole spectrum. So it's taking lambda 2 or the area around lambda 2, but if you look at lambda 2, this is the time pulse. Okay, now the time pulse, you have some part of the pulse which is getting reflected here, some part of the pulse going here and getting reflected, and all of these are adding up, right? So once you add it up, and this is, remember this time domain, this is not frequency domain. If you look at, these are frequency domain diagrams. This is a time domain pulse. So you have essentially shrunk the pulse by doing a non-uniform grating. Okay, so this is like, not only do dropping, as part of the add drop multiplexer, you're also reducing dispersion. So this is like a dispersion compensator plus dropping component. Okay. Isn't it fancy? I mean, it's pretty nice, right, just to hear about it. Okay. And the long period fiber gratings operate have a slightly different principle of operation. Okay. Now, the way they work is that here you are talking about energy that's going in that particular spectral region and you're getting that reflected back using these wavelength selective mirrors, essentially. And then those guys interfere and you sort of pick out the energy. Now, what happens in this long fiber gratings is that some of the energy is picked out from the spectral band and it is thrown into the cladding. Okay, it's completely weird, okay, don't ask me why. You take energy in the spectral band, some part of the energy goes from this band and you throw it into the cladding. And the cladding has high loss, is designed to have high loss. So what that means, that energy will go some distance and then die in the cladding. Okay, so you'll couple to other forward propagating modes in the cladding, and then the cladding modes are very lossy. Those particular cladding modes are lossy and they are quickly attenuated. So what you're doing essentially is you're creating some kind of a null, or actually an attenuation in a spectral band. Now, if you match this attenuation of the spectral band with a non-uniform gain of an EDFA, you can essentially flatten that gain of the EDFA. You follow what I'm saying? So an EDFA stands for an optical amplifier, which you'd like to have a flat gain. Flat gain means what? I have multiple wavelengths coming in from in a wave division multiplexing system. All of them, all of their signals have become weak, and you want to wake them up. So you want to give them a boost in power. That's what an amplifier does. Okay, but unfortunately, it boosts some wavelengths more, some wavelengths less. Okay, if you do this, I mean, you can have other nonlinear effects going forward. So you want to flatten the gain across the spectrum. Okay, and this is also important, because within that spectrum, if you give non-uniform gain, you'll have other issues. I mean, pulse shape can change, etc., right? So you want to flatten out that gain, and the way you flatten out the gain is you just remove some of the energy from that which you added. So the way you do the removing energy, you put you remove some of the energy and throw it into the cladding using this long period grating, and that energy is lost. So it's funny, right? You basically give it gain, then give it some loss just to flatten the whole thing out. Okay, now we'll look at a class of filters that are based upon cavities. Okay, now these are also filters. Okay, And these are not exactly gratings, okay? This is just based upon cavity, and we shall see the same cavity come pop up a number of times, okay? This is also used in concept of lasers. Excuse me. So, this whole thing just depends purely upon interference, okay? Now, that's why it's sometimes also called an interferometer, okay? And anything that uses a cavity and uses interference phenomenon is known as an echelon. Okay, and you hear the word echelon even in RF language. Okay, so you can actually create a cavity and in these sort of effects even in RF or plasma physics, etc. Okay, so essentially what you do is you have two mirrors. Okay, and these are highly reflective mirrors. Okay, you hit a ray of light at it. Okay, so actually the mirrors are internal, and this part is a single reflect. Okay, so. So the light goes through this, it will go hit the other mirror, get reflected back. So it reflects back, reflects back, reflects back, reflects back, reflects back. Okay, so it keeps going up and down. Okay, and I told you no mirror is perfect. Okay, so even if you have a high reflectivity, some part of it will be transmitted. So the opposite of reflectance is known as transmittance. Okay, so some part of the energy goes out. Okay, now it turns out that as you reflect back, reflect back, reflect back, only the thing which goes out, right? So you have waves that go out. Maybe some piece of the original wave went out. There is a wave which came, it went here, had one round of reflections, and then went out. There are waves which go once, twice, thrice, and go out. So essentially, there are waves which have gone larger distances. Okay, and remember, whenever you study waves, distance is phase. Okay, so what you have done is essentially you have taken copies of the wave, you have staggered them in phase, and all of them are going out. I mean, going out means what? If you take any point in space here, these are superimposed on each other. They add up, which is called interference. Superposition is nothing but interference. So when they add up, you are essentially asking the question, if I have different copies of the wave or different waves, which are staggered in phase by some multiple of phases, how do they add up? Okay, that's the question which is being asked here. Okay, the answer is given here. Okay, so the answer is given here. What it means is that essentially there's a huge spike. Some wavelengths add up very nicely. Other wavelengths die. Okay, depending upon the reflectivity of your mirror and what these wavelengths are. Okay, now let's understand this a little bit carefully. I don't know whether I have a good diagram here. Okay. So essentially what this means is that if I have a very, very high reflective mirror, let's say 99% or more than that, so most of it gets reflected, right? So what gets transmitted out will add up in phase, okay? I think I have a better diagram earlier. Let me just, give me one moment, okay? And this idea can be explained better. Here it is. When I explained to you the concept of interference, right? I told you, here's how it works. I mean, interference means that the intensities add up according to this formula, depending upon the phase, which is this phi, cos phi. Okay. So if it's out of phase, this will essentially be negative, and these guys will destructively interfere and they'll die. Okay. Now, if I have multiple waves which add up and they have equal phase differences, okay, and what will happen is that you will have peaks like this, and all the other things will die out. Okay? It's just a consequence of this formula. So I will have huge peaks, and then there will be a tight spectrum. Okay, so this is an interference phenomenon. Okay, so essentially you are taking advantage of interference and high reflectivity. If the reflectivity is smaller, what will happen is most of the large spectrum will go out, and you will not have this phenomenon. So what will happen in that case? The filter which is essentially created will be weaker in terms of its skirts will be. It'll be looser in some sense. Okay, so here's another way of doing it. So only particular wavelengths add up. Okay, and those wavelengths have to be have to satisfy a condition that the cavity length d is an integral multiple of half wavelengths. Okay, for those wavelengths, you think things will add up. So that's why you have periodic behavior. So those particular wavelengths for which this condition is satisfied, you have high gain. So most of those things go out, other things are attenuated. Okay, they don't get out. Okay, so this is a filter. what's the filter? It has to filter, or it has to give me something, right? So, so that's what it is. Okay, so you can make it a tunable filter or a tunable fabric ferrofilter by essentially changing the length of this cavity. Okay, now you can change the length of this cavity mechanically, but you have to make sure these two mirrors are perfectly parallel to each other. Okay, another fancy way of changing the length of the cavity or the effective length of the cavity is by changing the refractive index of the material. Okay, now you see the power of the refractive index. Okay, if you put the appropriate material here, like a piezoelectric material, and you give it an electric field, essentially it will compress effectively. Okay, and that's the idea. Okay, and there's a term called free spectral width, which talks about the difference between here. So essentially the way this works in wave division multiplexing is you take one channel here, another channel here, another channel here. So then it will just pass these bands around those channels and kill everything else in between. Okay. Okay, so there's another word which is used in these things. It's known as full width half maximum, which is used to, it's a measure of the it's a measure of the spread of this filter. Okay, so you see that typical transmission profile or transmittance profile or power transfer profile, it operates like this. Okay, now as you go higher and higher wavelengths, there's also some attenuation of what gets transmitted. Okay, so and this actually has a sort of Gaussian shape. Okay, so depending upon the channels you have, you have to carefully design the channel spacing and match your fabric or filters, etc., to match these things. So you can actually take out, extract some channels, kill the other ones, and so on. Okay, so there are people have essentially developed other optoelectronic components that have the same effect, but they are easily manufacturable, or more accurate, or more tunable, etc. Okay, so one class of filters which do essentially the same thing is called the thin film filters. Okay, so there's a lot of research in RPI also in thin film technologies, or the next generation thin film technologies. But essentially, the way it works here is it uses multiple cavities. Rather than using one cavity, you use another cavity. So the way this works is that the wavelengths that get out of one cavity, okay, will then go into another cavity and then do the same thing. And then, so it has to satisfy the condition for the other cavity so that it will pass through that cavity. And then it will go to one more cavity and it will have to satisfy one more condition to pass through. So that way you can actually, instead of having multiple pass bands, you can exactly create one pass band and kill out everything else. So this way you can null out all the other bands and just create one clean pass band. Okay, so the way this works is if you look at the filter transmission profile, if I just have one cavity, it will behave like this. And if I have two cavities, behave like this, and three cavities will have sharp, will have a nice flat top and a good skirt to it. Okay, so a three cavity TFMF, or as it's called, thin film multi-layer filter. Okay, so this, the way it, instead of having a single mirror, you have multiple mirrors here. Okay, so that's just a technical reason for it. And you have multiple cavities. So the way you can actually build a DMUX out of this is the following. You have multiple wavelengths that show up here, okay, and you have this thin film cavity over here. This is actually the three-stage thing I put here, okay. And then what goes through this is one pass band, lambda 1, and the remaining stuff gets reflected out. Then essentially it's like you take out lambda 1, all the other fellows go here, and then you get lambda 2 out here, then this reflects here, lambda 3, and so on and so forth. So this is a way in which you can demultiplex the entire thing, okay, and but you see here, you essentially you have a multi-stage demultiplexer. Okay, this is another figure which does exactly the same thing. This is the three cavity stuff, and you can do this multiple times to get different colors out. Okay, so the other next class of filters we shall study are known as Mach Zehnder filters. Okay, these are basically broadly fall into the category of interferometers. Okay. Now, interferometers, I mean, have a lot of similarities to what we saw. I mean, the basic idea is that you want to add some sort of a phase and then make them interfere. So once you do that, you will create, you want to make sure that the gains are at particular regions, okay? And then, so here the interferometer is a little more general in the sense that you add a little bit of phase and make it interfere. Okay, so then what you'll see the peaks for different wavelengths at different points, and then essentially put a fiber here and pull out that one, put a fiber here and pull out that wavelength. That's the basic idea. And here you have the 3 dB splitter which we talked about, which takes half the power, throws it here, half the power, throws it here. And a very simple way of understanding this is you add a small phase difference by just making this fiber go a little more longer. Right? And if you add a tunable phase difference, either by controlling this by refractive index of this material, you can do other fancy stuff here. Okay, and this is one way of thinking about it. You can have cascaded Maxwellian interferometers, and you can do tuning. Tuning can be done in a number of ways. You can do it by electric way. You can actually even tune by varying the temperature. Some of these things are also temperature sensitive, refractive index, and so on. But these typically have a broad band. I mean, they don't have, suppose I just want to do narrow band filtering, just get a sharp band, I might not be able to do that. And they have other issues like crosstalk and so on. So I mentioned there's a thermo-tunable Maxwellian thing. I mean, just put a voltage or just heat this up a little bit, then you can tune it that way. So Maxwellian interferometer are not very appealing in terms of filters. I mean, their concept is very useful as interferometers, because interferometers have been used all the way from trying to figure out the speed of light, understanding relativity, and so on and so forth. Okay, so I don't know whether you remember the Michaels and Morley experiment where they showed that even in spite of Earth's speed, the speed of light is not affected. Okay, so they actually took light and sent it in two ways, and then tried to look at the difference. Just it's similar to interferometric technique. We just make it go to distance and see the time difference and so on. Okay, so you could have multiple stages and you sort of cascade that to get a filter which looks like this. Okay, a better way, suppose you really want to do filters which have lots of inputs, lots of outputs. Okay, the component that is used to do that is known as a waveguide grating, or it's an arrayed waveguide grating. It's called AWG. Okay, so you have a peculiar shape here which is called the input coupler. So it takes all the inputs and then couples them. Okay, and you can view this as though you have lots of Maxwellian interferometers together. Okay, so you see that instead of in Maxwellian interferometer you have two inputs and two directions, right? Two waveguides. Here it's like you have many inputs and then you couple this energy equally into multiple waveguides, and then you give each waveguide slightly different phase shift, okay? And then you sort of try to make them interfere again, and so you can get your appropriate interference patterns, and then essentially you can separate out the wavelengths or demultiplex them, etc. So you see here, I have lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3, lambda 4 from channel 1 that is coming in. At the output, you see lambda 1, 1 here, lambda 2, 1 here. So essentially the things are transmitted here, and there's also some time shifting. Actually, these things are essentially multiplexed by doing this. Okay, so I have multiple inputs that are multiplexed to get multiple outputs. Okay, and this obviously is not tunable at this point, but we'll study later how you can make these kinds of things tunable. Okay, so this AWG stands for a generalization of the interferometric technique. Okay, so it's like a general filter that takes the wavelengths and throws them at different things and then sort of merges these things together. So some mix of a coupler and a filter. Okay, so this is another way of looking at it. So you can either separate out the wavelengths or you can mix wavelengths, etc. Okay, so another type of filter essentially uses similar principles. Put a splitter here, take the energy, split it by two and send it here. And you want to do the essential max sender idea, right? You want to send... you want to create different phase differences and then make them interfere again. Okay, now this phase differences can be done using other techniques. You can actually send an acoustic wave here, okay, and this acoustic wave, there's an acoustic transducer, okay, which essentially gives you an acoustic wave, and this acoustic wave interacts with the material to create refractive index variations, because acoustic wave actually creates material vibrations and that can create refractive index variations. And essentially what this has done is it's created a Bragg grating inside these two arms of the interferometer. Okay? And here essentially what you're doing here is this thing is polarization dependent. So you take inputs here and you split it up into two polarizations. This is like TE polarization, TM polarization, which is like X and Y type polarizations. And then, you have a Bragg rating for this, okay, which means some part of it will be reflected out. And a Bragg rating for this, some part of it will be reflected out, and you combine it, it's a reversible component, and you send it out somewhere else. Okay, and the remaining stuff goes here. So this is essentially a filter, same sort. But you should remember that the output of the filter sometimes can come here or here, okay, depending upon what you're talking about. Okay, so acoustic optic filter are interesting because RF techniques, it's very well known how to vary the RF bandwidth or RF waves. Okay, so you can essentially send different kinds of RF waves and tune where things go. Okay, so you can get this way or you can get this way. So so you have inputs which can go here or which can go here. You can couple them or filter them appropriately. Okay, so you can create dynamic wavelength cross connects to them. Okay, depending upon how fast you can tune these things and how fast this material will respond, you can create these sort of things. Okay, so you can also have multiple wavelengths, multiple RF things which operate simultaneously, and so you can essentially, it's like you can have the same stretch of material, but simultaneously you're creating two different Bragg ratings simultaneously. So what that means is that you have one Bragg rating which will select one wavelength, another Bragg rating which will select another wavelength. Normally you think of it as a separate Bragg rating, okay? But here no, you can, with acoustic techniques, it has the strange property that it can have two simultaneous Bragg ratings at the same time. It's like creating these like sort of partial mirrors thing which we talked about. That's what it's doing. So it has all, I mean, usual trouble. It has some crosstalk issues, wide pass bands and so on. Okay, so people have worked on how to create high channel count multiplexes, because if you want to do dense DWDM, I mean, these methods which are described earlier are used for the first generation DWDM systems that use 16 channels or smaller, 8 channel DWDM, 16 channel DWDM. So as people go to like 40 channel, 160 channel and so on, you need sort of multiplexes, demultiplexes that can operate. So there are two or three different ways of doing that. So there's one way known as a banded multi-stage multiplexer. So you take bands and essentially filter them once, and then you have a smaller multiplexer that can create this band. Okay, so you have one big multiplexer that operates only in terms of band, and you have guard space between the bands. The other way is to use an interleaving design where you have a multiplexer that takes inputs and then creates and interleave, creates a multiplex thing, and then this is like 1, 3, 5, etc. And then you have 2, 4, 6, and you have something known as an interleaver, which I have not discussed, which can be put here. And this part, again, is a big multiplexer. You can break it up and do the same thing. So it's a multi-stage interleaving design. Okay, it might remind you of merge sort, if you study that in sorting. Okay, how are you doing on time? Okay. Okay, we continue on a journey on amplifiers. Okay, so we talked about couplers, splitters, that was the first type of thing, like circulators, etc. Then we talked about filters, which are generally used for multiplexer technology. Now we're getting to amplifiers and regenerators. Amplifiers are probably the most important thing in all optical thing. Okay, so amplifier, the idea is very simple. You have a signal that is dying, you want to regenerate it. Okay, you want to make it go up. Okay. Now the issue is whether you want to do it, you want to convert to electronic domain and do it. Okay. What is the big deal in converting to electronic domain? The problem is that when you do a regeneration in the electronic domain, it depends upon the type of modulation you use. Okay, there are several types of modulation and they have different considerations for necessarily actually designing the modulations. Perhaps you want to have some clocking considerations, you want to have some other considerations, non-return to zero, blah blah blah. Okay, so there's a whole range of electronic modulation, digital modulation techniques, baseband techniques. So depending upon the type of modulation scheme you use, depending upon the rate at which you do modulation, you will have to develop a separate regenerator for each of them. So suppose I want to take a modulator that's been, a system that's been designed for 2.5 gigabit per second, and then I want to upgrade it to 10 gigabit per second, I'll have to replace each of these regenerators. Okay, so these old regenerators have been used to be called 3R. So they do reamplify, reshape, and retime. There are other things which do 2R, and then there's 1R which just does reamplify in the electronic domain, or it can also do reamplification in the optical domain. So So the optical domain is what is interesting. These are EDFAs. So as the technology is improved, you move from the 0.8 band to 1.3 band and so on. So you can operate at different bands of fiber so that you can go longer distance. You operate at higher power, better fibers and so on, so you can go further. And if you can't go any further, you have to re-amplify. You have to amplify it. Okay, but remember, from here to here, you have to deal with chromatic dispersion. Okay, re-amplification does not get rid of chromatic dispersion, but you can put some dispersion compensating modules here to sort of reduce chromatic dispersion by using some of the tricks I talked about earlier. Okay, at these amplification huts, as they're called, you can put other things as well. So these things are what we are interested in. All optical amplifiers essentially mean you don't convert anything into electronics. There's no conversion to electronics. It's done completely in the optical domain using all optical techniques. That's what this is. Okay, so that's EDFA stands for erbium doped fiber amplifier. It's fiber amplifier and it does this. And so there are varieties which does re-amplify, which is still some electronic component. And there are all optical EDFAs as well. So all optical EDFA is perhaps the most important thing that made dense wave diffusion multiplexing possible. So a regenerator is one which goes into the electronic domain. So you have to have an optical to electronic converter and electronic to optical converter. So these are sometimes known as OEO regenerators. You'll have this pulse shape that looks horrible like this, and then you convert it back and then you have a nice transfer function and you clean up the pulse and throw it out. It looks nice and when it goes out. So I talked about these things. When you're trying to upgrade the system, it's a big problem. So this, they have a nice word for this. It's known as transparency. So all optical amplifiers are transparent to all the stuff. I mean, I don't care what you're sending, how many bandwidths you're, how many wavelengths you're sending, and so on. What modulation scheme you're sending, you can use anything. This optical amplifiers are transparent. They'll just amplify the whole thing. And you'd like to have good gain bandwidth. So that is one of the features of optical amplifiers. You can actually operate over a wide range, like EDFAs have been able to amplify. So this is the key to enable EWBM, because you can take a wide range, you can throw 160 wavelengths and amplify all of them at once and flat, and offer all of them this flat gain, right? But there are other issues. It's not a thing. I mean, the flatness is not given easily. You have to design carefully to get them. The output power, you can add additional noise, and depending upon the phenomena they depend upon, you can actually add noise to this whole process. Okay, so whenever you see these sort of things, right, these are rolls of fiber, and then you can have some dispersion compensating fiber to compensate for dispersion, and essentially you use a amplification phenomena here to take these ranges of bandwidths, and then you make them higher. Okay, so we are not going to now, I think we are running out of time today, but tomorrow what we are going to, next class, which is not next week, okay, I was alerted that next week probably will not have class, okay, so we are going to meet the week after that, but we are going to learn how this thing works. Okay, that it depends upon two or three effects. One is called stimulated emission, which we talked about. The other is called Raman effect, which we should learn about. Okay, that's it. Thanks.